dawn, filled with life, therefore, I radiate peace and not war, violence is easy, it's not hardcore, so I don't blame MCs or main MCs, I don't even like profane MCs, whether they top dog or no name MCs, wannabes wanna be, so let me hear your freestyle and innovate, not simulate or imitate, that puts a limit on your fate, to be your MC, you gotta be great, like balls of fire, but don't burn down your empire, chase the desire, use your imagination, but don't be a liar, liar. You'll be thrown out the game by this MC umpire. Too many MCs, the chumps for hire. Selling out the culture to get their name on the flyer. Magazine, yo, the TV screen. American dream, where integrity is sacrificed. In the pursuit of cream. Brother, a beat is what I drop when I need to transform. Living through the rhythm, I'm reborn. To the rhythm, I am sworn every day. Giving a vision of life to sail away. Over the sound wave selection. To all you people who play in the war. We take your breath and you'll give it your all. To all you people who be playing high post. Climb down from your throne. You can't live life alone. Yeah. When we get together, we gon' sit in the throne. Shop a vibe of the cone. I'll be spitting the poem. Hit the bass boom, cousin in the studio room. I blossom and I bloom like I'm in Cancun. I perform and we chillin' while you bumpin' the song. Let the light in your life, letting go with the doom. With the mic, you survive. We no longer could use. Put the fire in the pipe. We inviting the muse. Now check it.
Live for life. Live for life.
From the fertile root in hot pursuit of percussion. No electronic sounds, pretend, flushing out soul and bass. Corresponding to life rhythms, our heartbeats and our nervous system. Pulses, channels to the brain to maintain the way we walk, what we need, and how we talk. Like tribal calls, we about survival, y'all. Can't escape the sounds from Naya Bingy drums. Snares with flares, scratches attached to verbal vernacular. Showing off skills, cause our flows be spectacular. Jazz, reggae, rock, and hip hop are the force. If you ain't driven by the beat, you ain't living.
Time for Generation X. Beats from breath, heartbeats that pump passion into your steps. Too many MCs, they spread disease. Work on healing yourself before you mess with these mic techniques. At ease, soldier, that's a paradox. I'm not a soldier, I'm an astronaut. Travel through this universe and I drop a pearl in each world, which is each verse. When my flow was wounded, yo, I bless the curse. Reflect and check my words before I infect this earth. I respect the earth, my place of birth. My place of birth,
birth. Yeah, my lifeline, right rhymes, vital sunshine. Yo, I'm zombie crime. We motivate minds to approach this. Speak each word, leave focus. Like Christ in the desert eating locusts. Practice Shinto Buddhism, Zen, Zephyria. It flows through my pen to the lost man Pangea. Some y'all don't believe the words have impact. It's spit to the dad like it won't come back. When it do, you say voodoo done got you cursed. Six pallbearers carry the remains from earth. Use your syllables first, yes, to bless the tomb. Ancestors always chilling when we in the room. Now here.
WBAI in New York City, and that's Bobby Israel, and who else, Steve? Who are the other people on that? You don't know.
I know them. I just can't bring it up.
Where is Bobby now?
He's in Brooklyn, renovating his apartment.
I hope he's listening. He's probably sleeping. Well, I enjoy that tremendously. Yeah. That's really good. That's terrific. That's good.
Sit in a comfortable position. Close your eyes and listen very closely to the sound of my voice. Imagine that there is nothing but you and the sound, floating freely high above the earth. Now, as you listen, you will begin to relax. Every sound you hear relaxes you further. Just you and the sound. Your arms and legs feel heavy, very heavy, like lead. Every sound takes you deeper and deeper. Nothing can disturb you. Every muscle, every part of your body is relaxing further and further as you drift down deeper and deeper. You are floating away from the sound of my voice, but you can still hear it. Imagine you are riding down an escalator, slowly going down farther and farther into deep relaxation. Count backwards from 5 to 0, and on every number you will go another level deeper, relaxing more completely on every count until I reach 0. On 0 you go twice as deep. Backwards from 5 to 0, deeper on every count, and on 0 twice as deep. 5. So relaxed. 4. 3. 2. Imagine that you are floating high above the earth in deep space, looking out on the universe, floating free in space, uplifted and filled with awe, silently watching the movements of the stars.
Earth so slowly turning. Something you want to talk about? Something now, you boys been in here giving that tall talk about this kitty and that kitty and so on and so forth. You kitties think you said something, don't you? Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to tell you about a kitty that tops them all. This here kitty was so wild and crazy and so strong and so gone and so groovy and so consistent and so wailing kitty that nobody could touch him. Tell you what his name was. His name was the Naz. That was the kitty's name, the Naz. You see, the Naz was a carpenter kitty, and he was in this little town where he worked around doing the carpenter job, you know what I mean? But what he was putting down was so hard and so fine and so beautiful that it laid there. Nobody could touch it or move it. Naturally, the Naz is going to have some buddies trying to dig what he's doing, you see. They're clustering up on the Naz, moving in on the Naz. Naz says, all right, you kiddies, now wait a minute. Tell you what I'm going to do. You kiddies want to get hit with me? About 12 of you kiddies can body with me. Come on, go. So they went with the Naz, and one day they was goofing off down the boulevard, and they run into a little kitty with a bent frame. And the Naz look at the kitty and say, what's the matter with you, kitty? The kitty said, well, my frame's bent, Naz. It says, bend down for me in front. So the Naz said, straighten. And that kitty straightened up there. And another kitty's eyes sticking out 14 inches. And all jumping up and down and say, look what the Naz put on that boy. That's the kind of kitty the Naz was. He laid his tongue in middle. Then they show you something else. Here's something mighty peculiar. See, the Naz, he's so busy. He's copycatting around his here town, you know, with being kind on. That he had to send his kitties across this little old pond, you see, over to pick up something for the Naz, some business he had over there, you see what I mean? He couldn't go, so he sent these kitties. So these kitties, about 8 or 10 of them, climbed into this boat, and they start sculling across the water, and for a little while, everything was cool, you see. Meantime, wham, a big old wailing storm come up. The wind is blowing and storming on these kitties, and the boat is rocking up and down. The kitties is hanging on, fearing that the whole business is going to sink right to the bottom of the ocean. And one kitty look up, and here come the Naz. Is anybody you ever see walking right across the water? And the Naz say, what's the matter with you kitties? Kitties, can't you see this here storm storming and the wind wailing and can on here with this here storm? And the Naz say, I told you to stay cool. Then there's one little kitty on board that boat, I forget his name, I think it was Jude. Old Jude says, hey, Naz, can I make it out there with you? And the Naz said, yeah, make it, Jude. No, Jude went stomping off that boat, took about 5 steps, dropped his whole carton, boom, the Naz had to put him back on board. You talking about crazy kitties. You talking about kitties that come on. They ain't never going to quit. That's the Naz. This here Naz, you see, he is talking, and he's talking so much jive and saying so many strange things to all these kitties in this little town where he's the carpenter kitty, that little by little, the crowd are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon the Naz, he's forced to move out into a larger space where he can spitting on these kitties, you see, and he's goofing off down the boulevard, and the crowd is following with him, and he gassing about this and jiving about that, and talking about how pretty the birds is, and how pretty the tree is, and how pretty this and that, and so on and so forth. You see, the Naz, he had them pretty eyes. He saw everything pretty, see. And what he was doing was turning these kitties' eyes on through his eyes so they could see how pretty it was too, see. Well, by the time these kitties are so hung up with what the Naz is putting down, by the time they come to, there's about 42 miles out of this here town, and they have come to the conclusion that it is golfing time. And there ain't one kitty in the 10,000 that's got the first part of a biscuit. Well, the Naz dig this job. See, the Naz always way ahead all the time. He's so cool, got everything covered. He was jobbing all these kitties. So he looked at the kitties and say, you kitties are hungry, ain't you? Kitties say, yeah, Naz, we're hungry. It's our fault, though, Naz. We listen, you come on so hard and so strong and so cool that we don't forgot that it's going to be scoffing time. And yeah, we is. Yeah. We ain't got a biscuit. So the Naz, well, I'm going to straighten you kitties now. You hip to everything I say. You believe what I'm putting down. And says, I'm going to straighten you. Says, we're with you, Naz. Take it cool. Take it down. So the Naz lift up his arm and he go, wham! Boom! These here kitties suddenly find out that in the left hand they got a great big smoked fish, and in the right hand they got a big double loaf of this home cooked mammy loving, sweet, beautiful, soft scented southern bread. Warm.
do the touch.
He's getting like a flip, waving that fish and shaking them blues. I want to tell you something, this here Naz, he never did nothing simple. When he laid it, he laid it. Because of the great and wonderful curiosity that beautiful words will call forth from a curious person, I was, shall I say, bent towards and did finally consummate the search, the most profound search of the word, chastity belt. Chastity belt. Chastity belt, for the people who are not familiar with the term. It seems that beyond the 14th century, they conceived a bit of a belt that went around a young lady's midriff in such a manner as to hold her quite secure. Like you went to the office in those days, you said, Muriel, come here. She did, with a belt, with a key, happy as a bird in the blasted breeze. Here's how the entire maneuver originated. Between the 14th and the 15th centuries, there was a tremendous methylabadabbing swept the land. Everyone was going in search of the Holy Grail. Few of the beggars knew what it was, and those who had the least inkling of it blew it up to such fantastic proportions that they're all going. You going, Harry? You going, John? You going, Fred? Good. We'll all go together. Now, the Duke of Fitzport is standing in his courtyard. He's working his vice weapon down. He doesn't want to get caught in the middle of the fracas. There's much activity taking place in the courtyard. The various knaves and grooms are working with the horses and polishing the armor. There are three forges going ding, 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 bang, 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 bang. Bang, ding, ding, bang, 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 bang. And the neighing of the horse and the conversation of the men, suddenly out of the smoke of one of the forts comes a little blacksmith help. And he says, "Sire, may I?" He said, "No," he said, "don't put that horse over there, you jackass. Over there. That's better." Ding, 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 bang, 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 bang. Activity, activity, activity. In this beautiful safari in pursuit of the grail, taking place at a mad and a rapid pace. And finally, out from the forge again, comes a little character. He says, "Sire, I realize that I take my very head in my hands. When I ask you for a few moments of your precious time, almighty master, but I've conceived something in my fancy. If you just would give me a few minutes..." Very well. Boom, they opened the door, and there, on a table, lay a beautiful golden belt.
Oriental gold.
But hard. And all about it were little figurines, each and every one of them engraved in virgin tones. Well, the Duke looks at this unusual affair, and rather than being highly flattered, he blows his royal wig, so to speak. "How dare you bring me here to see a common ordinary belt with a few jewels in it, when I have jewels and belts by the carload, taking up my valuable time. Before the sun rises in the morning, you'll be singing soprano." "Why, this is not a common ordinary belt, your grace. It's a chastity belt." "A what?" "A chastity belt, your majesty, to preserve the honor of your lady fair while you, brave one, go in search of the grail." Duke looks at it again, and he says, "By cat, sheer genius. Make me 12 at once." Never confirmed it on the show. Now the scene changes but tempora, and the Duke is now a Negro Duke. He's still stacked back in his armor. He has a chastity belt behind him, and he's making the ascent around the spiral staircase to the Queen's boudoir. And while he is making the ascent, he is wiping his brains for a piece of conversational putty whereby he may introduce this new and unusual affair to Her Grace in such a manner as not to have to chase her all over the blasted courtyard. But when he arrives, he has no answer. Being a creature of rhythm, he knocks anyway. And the voice says, "Who's there?"
"It's me, baby, the king."
"Is that my big and groovy loving
greatest kitty that ever jumped on a white swinging horse, the greatest cat that ever put his feet down in the queen's boudoir?
Yes, baby.
Fall in, Daddy.
Well,
look at the uniform on Daddy. Daddy, you really stayed in that uniform. I never saw that gas with me, baby. I dug a lot of strides, but I never seen none of them trends. Well, you ain't here this day. You is gone.
Yeah, baby, I'm in here pretty good, ain't I, sugar? They got to put me on the horse to get me on the horse. But when I'm on, I'm gone. I'm here, Daddy.
What you got behind you, Daddy?
Yeah. Is that just like a woman? Close the window, open the door. Now she observes that there's something of high merit. She sees the beauty of the jewels and the Oriental culture. She says to him,
"And here's Groovy. Here's Daddy. He's busy as 100,000 bird dogs getting them cats and kitties together to pick up on that bill. Busiest man in this here world. But before he go, he gonna pull something down. Ain't that Groovy?"
"Well, it says, you know how it is living with His Majesty the King, baby. Anything will ever jump off at any time. I'm hip, Daddy."
Now she looks at it again, and never having dreamed of the existence of a chastity belt, she says to him with the most profound naivety, "What is it, Daddy? A jukebox?"
Great day in the morning. I suppose you could call it that, sugar. Yeah, that's what it is, a jukebox. He says it out. What's the matter, baby?
I just say, ooh, that's all I say. Something crazy and irregular looking about that little old thing there. I just say, ooh.
No, baby, you ooing a little bit too much around here, lady. You know that, don't you?
I just say, ooh, daddy, that's all I say.
You know I got to get that grill, baby. You know I got to get that grill.
I know you're going to get it, too, daddy. I know you're going to pick up on it. You the one. You going to swing with that grill. I know it.
Well, you know, baby, there's some characters sitting around here in these here castles that don't happen to be on the hook for the grill. You hit for that too, don't you?
That's the living truth, daddy. Some of them cats jump off and high and hard.
That's what I'm talking about, baby. Some doctor and I'm out there got my cats and kitties about ready to whop that veil into a big fine sack. He say, when them cats love you, get jumping so high, boom, and so hard, boom, that they run over that castle wall, right into your boudoir. And he said, this little gadget's going to give them the supreme surprise of their natural born life. Snap. She goes, what?
Don't you take one step outside that door. You bring that key back, unlock this here mess. I'm going to hex the house. I'm going to hex the grill. You ain't going to have us talking like you. Come on back here. Don't you step outside that door. Unlock this.
Luscious lover, sugar baby. Oh, dear, my sweet sugar baby. Getting all excited about nothing at all, sugar. Why, it's just like a new pair of shoes, baby. You gotta wear a little while before you get used to it. I'll see you in the grill.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish you could be on this wonderful boulevard today and see the thousands upon thousands handsome men and beautiful ladies enjoying this wonderful morning sunshine to salute the most fabulous governor the state has ever seen. And there is Governor Gulpwell now getting into his car. He has a beautiful white boutonniere in his lapel and a gorgeous blonde on his arm. And there he is, ladies and gentlemen. He's waving to the crowd as they all see him and their eye catch him. They swing forward. Hooray, the Gulpwell! Hooray!
How do you do, my friends? How do you do?
I come for the Gulpwell.
How do you do, my dear girl? Rum, 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 rum,
hi, there goes the great governor now. Do you see him over there? Gulpwell! Gulpwell for governor! He should be president!
Hi, dear friends, I thank you very much.
Ah,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, out here in the stadium, there seems to be a couple of 100,000 people here. They're all waiting breathlessly for the governor to speak. And even now turning upon the man who's going to have the pleasurable job of introducing the governor.
I would like to say that there never has and there never will be a human being. A human being who has had the great courage and resourcefulness than our present excellency. A man who has the people's hearts and good wishes in his heart. A man who's done more for this country than any other living human being. Governor Slugwell.
Hey, dear friend, I would like to say that I never before in my experience have I been such a happy man. Just to see all these beautiful people out here to say hello to me, it's like being born again. I should like to report that my 14 Rolls Royces are in perfect mechanical condition, and I've opened up 2 new banks. I also have funds in Mexico City. All is well. And I'm going to say this much, and I stand by my word, that each and every member of the state force will receive a substantial advance in which will take place on the Wednesday of the next month. So help me as my word as the governor. Hooray, the governor, summon him! I summon him, summon him! Summon him, president! Hello, summon him! There he goes, ladies and gentlemen, in his magnificent car with his beautiful blonde, his beautiful flower in his lapel, and a magnificent smile upon his face. Hi, Slugwell! How do you do, my dear boy?
To hear again the songbird's sweet melodious tone. Won't you meet me out in the moonlight all along? The dusky light, the day is losing. Orchids, poppies, black eyed Susan. The urban sky that melts with flesh and bone.
We interrupt this CD and song for an important announcement. The CD player stopped working. That's the end of the announcement. I'll take a few telephone calls, Steve, since we're sitting here. I guess I could play something else, too. But we're at 209-2900, should you want to talk to us. That was Lord Buckley before Richard Lord Buckley. When I first met Steve, and this was back in 1950-something, Steve had memorized many of Lord Buckley's better routines to every inflection, and then he would take them and do them in coffee houses, and he had sort of a kind of a following, as I recall, in they followed you over to Three Penny Opera, where you played one of the polices, right?
I had a number of roles in that show. I played I played Bob the Saw, one of Mac the Knife's gang. I also played a cop.
Why do you think they called him Bob the Saw?
because I think he got most folks very sore. But you know, just listening to that, Lord Buckley, I never heard that Governor Slugwell one live. I have a studio version of it, but every time I hear this man, it's such a reminder of where it is, where it always will be, and the depth and the extraordinary ability of that man to convey the human condition. And I mean, we were all in our early 20s when he passed away back in 1960, and one had to learn his stuff to keep it alive. I used to close all my sets at the Gaslight. I used to say, ladies and gentlemen, there's a man who died recently. It's almost impossible to describe what he did. And instead of describing what he did, I would always close with a Lord Buckley piece at that time. You know, I remember doing it in the mountains of Brazil to some cats who didn't know a word of English, but they dug the rhythms. I did it for the Ganawa tribe in Morocco, you know. I'm going, yeah, the Naz was goofing down by the boulevard one day, and he run into this little cat with the bent frame. So the Naz walk over to this little cat with the bent frame, and he said, hey, baby, what's the matter with you? The cat with the bent frame said, hey, Naz, my frame's bent. It's been bent from in front. So the Naz put the golden eyes of love on this here little kitty, and he looked right down into the window of this little cat's soul, and he says, straighten.
Uh-huh.
The cat shut up like an arrow, was not bent no more, and everybody in the town jumping up and down said, dig what the Naz put on that boy. You dug him before, redig him now. The Naz said, dig, and thou shalt be dug. The Naz said, drag not, and thou shalt not be drugged.
There's a certain place where dumb waiters boom, doors slam, dishes crash. Every window is a mother's mouth bidding the street, shut up, go skate somewhere else, come home. My voice is the loudest. There, my own mother is still as full of breathing as me, and the grocer stands up to speak to her. Mrs. Abramowitz, he says, people should not be afraid of their children. Ah, Mr. Bialik, my mother replies. If you say to her or her father, shh, they say, in the grave it will be quiet. From Coney Island to the cemetery, says my papa. It's the same subway, it's the same fare. I am right next to the pickle barrel. My pinky is making tiny whirlpools in the brine. I stop a moment to announce, Campbell's tomato soup! Campbell's vegetable beef soup. Campbell's scotch broth. Be quiet, the grocer says. The labels are coming off. Please, Shirley, be a little quiet, my mother begs me. In that place, the whole street groans, be quiet, be quiet, but steals from the happy chorus of my inside self not a tittle or a jot. There, too, but just around the corner, is a red brick building that has been old for many years. Every morning the children stand before it in double lines which must be straight. They are not insulted. They are waiting anyway. I am usually among them. I am, in fact, the first since I begin with A. One cold morning, the monitor tapped me on the shoulder. Go to room 409, Shirley Abramowitz, he said. I did as I was told. I went in a hurry up a down staircase to room 409, which contained sixth graders. I had to wait at the desk without wiggling until Mr. Hilton, their teacher, had time to speak. After 5 minutes, he said, Shirley? What? I whispered. He said, my, my, Shirley Abramowitz, they told me you had a particularly loud, clear voice and read with lots of expression. Could that be true? Oh, yes, I whispered. In that case, don't be silly. I might very well be your teacher someday. Speak up, speak up. Yes, I shouted. More like it, he said. Now, Shirley, can you put a ribbon in your hair or a bobby pin? It's too messy. Yes, I bawled. Now, now, calm down. He turned to the class. Children, not a sound. Open at page 39. Read till 52. When you finish, start again. He looked me over once more. Now, Shirley, you know, I suppose, that Christmas is coming. We are preparing a beautiful play. Most of the parts have been given out, but I still need a child with a strong voice, lots of stamina. Do you know what stamina is? You do. Smart kid. You know, I heard you read The Lord is My Shepherd in assembly yesterday. I was very impressed. Wonderful delivery. Mrs. Jordan, your teacher, speaks highly of you. Now, listen to me, Shirley Abramowitz. If you want to take the part and be in the play, repeat after me. I swear to work harder than I ever did before. I looked to heaven and said at once, oh, I swear! I kissed my pinky and looked at God. That is an actor's life, my dear, he explained. Like a soldier's, never tardy or disobedient to his general, the director. Everything, he said, absolutely everything, will depend on you. That afternoon, all over the building, children scraped and scrubbed the turkeys and sheaves of corn off the schoolroom windows. Goodbye, Thanksgiving. The next morning, a monitor brought a red paper and green paper from the office. We made new shapes and hung them on the walls and glued them to the doors. The teachers became happier and happier. Their heads were ringing like the bells of childhood. My best friend, Evie, was prone to evil, but she did not get a single demerit for whispering. We learned Holy Night without an error. How wonderful, said Miss Glacé, the student teacher, to think that some of you don't even speak the language. We learned Deck the Halls and Hark the Herald Angels. They weren't ashamed and we weren't embarrassed. Oh, but when my mother heard about it all, she said to my father, Misha, you don't know what's going on there. Kramer is the head of the tickets committee. Who? Asked my father. Kramer? Oh, yes, an active woman. Active? Active has to have a reason. Listen, she said sadly. I'm surprised to see my neighbors making tra-la-la for Christmas. My father couldn't think of what to say to that. Then he decided, you're in America. Clara, you wanted to come here. In Palestine, the Arabs would be eating you alive. Europe, you had pogroms. Argentina is full of Indians. Here, you got Christmas. Some joke, huh? Very funny, Misha. What is becoming of you? If we came to a new country a long time ago to run away from tyrants, and instead we fall into a creeping pogrom, that our children learn a lot of lies, so what's the joke? Ach, Misha, your idealism is going away. So is your sense of humor. That I never had, but idealism you had a lot of. I am the same Misha Abramowitz. I didn't change an iota. Ask anyone. Only ask me, says my mama. May she rest in peace. I got the answer. Meanwhile, the neighbors had to think of what to say, too. Marty's father said, you know, he has a very important part, my boy. Mine also, said Mr. Sauerfeld. Not my boy, said Mrs. Klieg. I said to him, no. The answer is no. When I say no, I mean no. The rabbi's wife said, it's disgusting. But no one listened to her. Under the narrow sky of God's great wisdom, she wore a strawberry blonde wig. Every day was noisy and full of experience. I was right-hand man, Mr. Hilton said. How could I get along without you, Shirley? He said, your mother and father ought to get down on their knees every night and thank God for giving them a child like you. He also said, you're absolutely a pleasure to work with, my dear, dear child. Sometimes he said, for God's sake, what did I do with the script? Shirley, 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 find it. Then I answered quietly, here it is, Mr. Hilton. Once in a while, when he was very tired, he would cry out, Shirley, I'm just tired of screaming at those kids. Will you tell Ira Pushkov not to come in till Lester points to that star the second time? Then I roared, Ira Pushkov, what's the matter with you? Dope. Mr. Hilton told you 5 times already. Don't come in till Lester points to that star the second time. Ah, Clara, my father asked. What does she do there till 6 o'clock? She can't even put the plates on the table. Christmas, said my mother coldly. Ho, ho, my father said. Christmas. What's the harm? After all, history teaches everyone. We learn from reading this is a holiday from pagan times also. Candles, lights, even Hanukkah. So we learn it's not altogether Christian. So if they think it's a private holiday, they're only ignorant, not patriotic. What belongs to history belongs to all men. You want to go back to the Middle Ages? Is it better to shave your head with a second-hand razor? Does it hurt Shirley to learn to speak up? It does not. So maybe someday she won't live between the kitchen and the shop. She's not a fool. I thank you, Papa, for your kindness. It is true about me to this day. I am foolish, but I am not a fool. That night, my father kissed me and said with great interest in my career, Shirley, tomorrow's your big day. Congrats. Save it, my mother said. Then she shut all the windows in order to prevent tonsillitis. In the morning, it snowed. On the street corner, a tree had been decorated for us by a kind city administration. In order to miss its chilly shadow, our neighbors walked 3 blocks east to buy a loaf of bread. The butcher pulled down black window shades to keep the colored lights from shining on his chickens. Ah, not me. On the way to school, with both my hands, I tossed it a kiss of tolerance. Poor thing, it was a stranger in Egypt. I walked straight into the auditorium past the staring children. Go ahead, Shirley, said the monitors. 4 boys, big for their age, had already started work as prop men and stagehands. Mr. Hilton was very nervous. He was not even happy. Whatever he started to say ended in a sideward look of sadness. He sat slumped in the middle of the first row and asked me to help Miss Glacé. I did this, although she thought my voice too resonant and said, show off. Parents began to arrive long before we were ready. They wanted to make a good impression. From among the yards of drapes, I peeked out at the audience. I saw my embarrassed mother. Ira, Lester, and Meyer were pasted to their beards by Miss Glacé. She almost forgot to thread the star on its wire, but I reminded her. I coughed a few times to clear my throat. Miss Glacé looked around and saw that everyone was in costume and online waiting to play his part. She whispered, "All right." Then, Jackie Sauerfeld, the prettiest boy in first grade, parted the curtains with his skinny elbow and in a high voice sang out, "Parents, dear, we are here to make a Christmas play in time. It we give in narrative and illustrate with pantomime." He disappeared. My voice burst immediately from the wings to the great shock of Ira, Lester, and Meyer, who were waiting for it but were surprised all the same. I remember the house where I was born. Miss Glacé yanked the curtain open, and there it was, the house, an old hayloft, where Celia Cornblue lay in the straw with Cindy Lou, her favorite doll. Ira, Lester, and Meyer moved slowly from the wings toward her, sometimes pointing to a moving star and sometimes ahead to Cindy Lou. It was a long story, and it was a sad story. I carefully pronounced all the words about my lonesome childhood while little Eddie Braunstein wandered upstage and down with his shepherd's stick looking for sheep. I brought up lonesomeness again and not being understood at all except by some women everybody hated. Eddie was too small for that, and Marty Groff took his place wearing his father's prayer shawl. I announced 12 friends, and half the boys in the fourth grade gathered around Marty, who stood on an orange crate while my voice harangued. Sorrowful and loud, I declaimed about love and God and man. But because of the terrible deceit of A.B. Stock, we came suddenly to a famous moment. Marty, whose remembering tongue I was, waited at the foot of the cross. He stared desperately at the audience. I groaned, "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" The soldiers, who were sheiks, grabbed poor Marty to pin him up to die, but he wrenched free, turned again to the audience, and spread his arms aloft to show despair and the end. I murmured at the top of my voice, "The rest is silence, but as everyone in this room, in this city, in this world now knows, I shall have life eternal." That night, Mrs. Cornblue visited our kitchen for a glass of tea. "How's the virgin?" asked my father with a look of concern. "For a man with a daughter, you got a fresh mouth, Abramowitz." "Here," my father said kindly, "have some lemon. It'll sweeten your disposition." They debated a little in Yiddish, then fell in a puddle of Russian and Polish. What I understood next was my father, who said, "Still and all, it was certainly a beautiful affair, you have to admit, introducing us to the beliefs of a different culture." "Well, yes," said Mrs. Cornblue. "The only thing, you know Charlie Turner, that cute boy in Celia's class, a couple others, they got very small parts, or no part at all. In very bad taste, it seemed to me. After all, it's their religion." "Ah," exclaimed my mother, "what could Mr. Hilton do? They got very small voices. After all, why should they holler? The English language they know from the beginning by heart. They're blonde like angels. You think it's so important they should get in the play? Christmas, the whole piece of goods, they own it." I listened and listened until I couldn't listen anymore. Too sleepy, I climbed out of bed and kneeled. I made a little church of my hands and said, "Hear, O Israel." Then I called out in Yiddish, "Please, good night, good night." "Shh." My father said, "Shh yourself," and slammed the kitchen door. I was happy. I fell asleep at once. I had prayed for everybody. My talking family, cousins far away, passers-by, and all the lonesome Christians. I expected to be heard. My voice was certainly the loudest.
The Roman masters when Jesus walked the land. In Judea and in Galilee they ruled with an iron hand. And the poor were sick with hunger, and the rich were clothed in splendor, and the rebels, whipped and crucified, hung rotting as a warning. And Jesus knew the answer, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, said love your enemies. But Judas was a zealot, and he wanted to be free. Resist, he said, the Romans' tyranny. Now Jesus was a conjurer, and miracles were his game. And he fed the hungry thousands, and they glorified his name. He cured the lame and the lepers, and he calmed the wind and the weather. And the wretched flocked to touch him, so their troubles would be taken. And Jesus knew the answer. All you who labor, all you who suffer, only believe in me. But Judas sought a world where no one starved or begged for bread. The poor are always with us, Jesus said. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. There was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. Now Jesus sowed division where none had been before. Not the slave against the master, but the poor against the poor. Let son to rise up against father, and brother to fight against brother. For he that is not with me is against me, was his teaching. Said Jesus, I am the answer. You unbelievers shall burn forever, shall die in your sins. Not sheep and goats, said Judas, but together we may dare shake off the chains of tyranny we share. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. It was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. Jesus stood upon the mountain with a distance in his eyes. I am the way, the life, he cried, the life that never dies. So renounce all earthly treasures and pray to your heavenly Father. And he pacified the hopeless with the hope of life eternal. Said Jesus, I am the answer. And you hunger, only remember your rewards in heaven. So Jesus preached the other world, but Judas wanted this, and he betrayed his master with a kiss. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. It was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. By sword and gun and crucifix, Christ's gospel has been spread. 2,000 cruel years have shown the way that Jesus led. The heretics burned in torture, and the butcher and bloody crusaders. The bombs and rockets sanctified that rained down death from heaven. They followed Jesus. They knew the answer. All unbelievers must be believers, or else be broken. So play.